so the library hosts this weekly discussion because we believe that everyone should have access to information, whether or not we necessarily agree with the information. So I do ask that hopefully we'll have a lively discussion, but that everyone be respectful of everyone else's opinion, whether or not you agree with it. At the end of the session, there are these wonderful little slips that I would ask you to take and just go to this address and fill out our survey so we can learn more about what you all would like to see every Thursday during the quarter. So, next week, we will be having Nat Steiner, who will be discussing segregation in South Africa, parallels and implications. But this week, we have the Director of Public Safety, Alvin McLean, and he'll be discussing personal safety. Protect yourself, personal safety at Seattle Central College. So, everyone, give them a minute.
Thank you, and thank you. When I was asked to do this, or I was asked, I think it was an email, it was an email, but it was someone's safety and security around Seattle Central. And it was a joke, but somehow I got put first on the agenda, which is fine with me. I've been here now, and I just looked at the calendar this morning. Come this Saturday, it'll be my third, year here. And in the 3 years that I've been here, Seattle Central Public Safety has changed a great deal. When I first got here, our department probably wasn't the world's greatest team players, and they were kind of like individuals. We were kind of looking more of a team. My first day of school here, and I'll give you a little background on that, is I started the day that the Army blast was coming down the Fraser Valley. So I came into work on time like a good state employee does, and we opened late that day, and I didn't get notified. So I set the parking garage and I started walking around the campus, walking around the garage and seeing things, and I actually found an open door to get in, which is not good for the director of public safety to do. And I got into the building and I started wandering around a building I didn't know, and I actually got lost in Seattle Central for a few minutes until I found the security office. And that afternoon we closed at 1 o'clock for the flame Fraser blast that dumped snow for the next week and not power at my house to pull me up. That night at 11:56 we had a homicide on campus. That was my first day of school. And it's been that active ever since. Not that we have homicides every day, but that was my first day here. My career in the Seattle area, King County area, in 2001, I became the emergency coordinator and a public safety officer at Bellevue College. That started my career up here. I've been in higher ed for 32 years. I am a lot older than I look. I was a campus security officer as a student, making $3.35 32 years ago. And I just work my way up. I like working for the state. People think I'm crazy. I like doing my job. People think I'm crazy. But I think it's a good job. It's a fun job. It's an ever-changing job. I'm a very hands-off type of director. My officers will do what they need to do to get the job done, and I support what they do. We have changed our uniform. We have changed our look. We have changed our philosophy. We are on a customer service model to where we are out there to serve the community that we are entrusted with. And our community is kind of unique. I mean, the Bellevue campus of the world is a campus. It's 100 acres, 20 surface parking lots, 6-story parking garage. It's pretty enclosed. Seattle Central, I have buildings across the streets. My geo map of this campus for crime statistics actually takes in a lot of businesses because I can't say they're not part of the campus. I can say the park isn't part of my campus. But, you know, it's kind of hard to say where our lines are for this school. So when we talk about your personal safety, I can say with about 90% certainty that on any given day at Seattle Central itself, you can feel pretty safe. Our issues and situations are when you leave the school, or if you go walk to lunch, or if you go out at night if you're an international student. What type of precautions should you take or can you take to better protect yourself from harm or from whatever should happen to you in the world? Last year, I spent this time last year in a lot of international program classrooms talking about that because we had international students that were being victimized. We had an international student that was shot in the leg. We had an international student, two international students that were victims of strong arm robberies. They didn't happen at campus. They happened at their home state or at a venue, but it does impact us. Because there are students. It comes back to campus and people talk about it. So how do you protect yourself here? you see something suspicious, you say something. You see it when you go to the airport, you see it when you go to the train station, you'll see these signs from Homeland Security to say, if you see something, say something. Seattle Central will most likely be the first community college on the West Coast to join that program. Because I am liaison with the Homeland Security Office for other things, I think we're going to actually be a pilot program for the area for see something, say something in higher ed. I think the University of Washington will beat me, but as a community college, you'll probably be the first college to be part of that. And what that means is you'll start to see posters hopefully soon around springtime, late spring, pop up around campus that will actually say, if you see something, say something, and it'll actually have our phone number listed, have an 800 phone number listed, plus a 911 listed. So if you see a package that's been sitting in a backpack that's been sitting by the door for a while, perfectly, if you see something, say something. If you see a bag sitting unattended for a while, that's what it's all about. It also goes to people. I know we have some unique people around this campus that aren't students, but if you see something that just your sixth sense tells you that it doesn't feel right, call us. I mean, we have an astronomically large call load in 3 years. When I first got here, we got very little phone calls from people feeling uncomfortable. I think today we have an average of about 40 phone calls, 45 phone calls every day that come into us for someone saying, this just doesn't feel right, he doesn't look right, this car doesn't look right. Weird things, people think they're weird phone calls, but my officers go to each one of those calls, or I go to each one of those calls, and we take a look and try to figure out what's going on. So we have a much better communication with our college community today, I think, than we did in the past. And that was one of the reasons I was brought in here, because I truly believe in a community-based type program. I can't do it all. I'm a state department within a state agency within the state, and I have very limited budget. So I asked the community to help us. And whenever I talk to faculty or staff meetings or students, I enlist your help because we can't be everywhere all the time. I try to be out of my office as much as I can, to be out wandering around helping my officers out as much as I can. But sometimes I have to do meetings, I have to do presentations, I have to go see people. You know, we need your help. I mean, there's only six of y'all in here, but we need your help. And so if you can help us, help you, that would be great. How can you protect yourself here at Seattle Central? I hit on it a little bit. If you see something, say something, call us. If you are a victim of a crime, this is my website. If you are a victim of a crime, you need to report it to us. Not just because of the statistical reasoning of it, but we do need to know what's going on. And I have a crime program that actually can track crime. So every year I can actually, or every 3 or 4 months, or every month, I can pull up a little chart that shows me where a lot of thefts are happening. It happens a lot in this area for some reason. It happens in the library and the atrium, an awful lot. But we can track those crimes, and we can actually make up hot areas for my officers to spend more time in, walk through more often. So we do take the information we get very seriously. The other reason you need to report crime is, according to the federal government every year, I'm supposed to report crime to them under the Clery Act. And you all probably know a little bit more about it now. It's probably called the Violence Against Women's Act, the Campus Safe Act, is now part of the Clery Act. And we have two things out of the Clery Act that you can look at actually on my webpage. And one of them is the crime statistics, which will be popping. And it looks kind of scary, and it's not really that bad. If you actually look at it, you're going to see the homicide that I talked about right there, and that'll go away next year. What Clery says is, for the preceding 3 years, I need to report all crimes that happen within my geo-specific location of my campus of Seattle Central. So, I can tell you that the sex offense fondling was the incident that happened last spring at a Broadway performance hall that I got to be on TV for a week with, which I totally hate being on TV, because the video adds 20 pounds to you, and I'm already 20 pounds overweight, so that makes me 300 pounds. But yeah, it happened, so it gets reported. I do not report this, I get fined. I don't get fined, this is the college gets fined. But it's $37,000 if I don't report that fine. We don't report that. We had, you know, 3 aggravated assaults last year. We had some fights that were not enough. Part of our students, most likely, I don't think they were, but they were on the campus commons or on the campus area,
and they were reported.
Our biggest crimes that we do have on campus are, as you can see, burglary. We have a couple cars coming out of the parking garage every once in a while. But the largest crime you will ever see that gets reported on this campus is larceny. And larceny is theft. And I can say of those 53 crimes, probably 40 plus of them are out of a place that we're sitting very close to called the library. It's a crime of opportunity. If I leave my cell phone sitting on a table out there and I go into the book stacks to get a book, I come back, I can guarantee you 9 out of 10 times, my iPhone's gonna grow some legs and walk away. If I leave my iPad sitting on a table in the atrium to go get a cup of coffee, and there's a group of people sitting at the table, I give it 80% certainty your iPad's probably gonna go feed and walk away. It's a crime of opportunity. So we need you to be aware of that. We need the people of the community of the campus to be aware of that. That number, I hate to be a pessimist, be optimistic, that number will never go down. I can talk to orientations all the time, I can talk to new employees all the time about this, and I did a study a long time ago when I was at Bellevue as the assistant director, and 1% of the people I talked to would be victims of attendance because they won't believe it. And I did the study for a whole year when I was assistant director there, and it turned out to be almost 2%. They just don't believe it. And our biggest vulnerable population is our international population, and then our student population, and then our employee population. Employees, it's a little bit harder to get to us, because a lot of us stuff is through a door to our office. But sometimes when we go out to lunch, you know, we can leave our purses laying around, leave our jackets laying around. My fiance had her credit card stolen out of her wallet we just found out about. We don't know when it was taken. We kind of think an 18-year-old in Arizona might have it, but we're not sure. Her daughter. But, you know, we don't know how long our credit card's been missing, so we have actually killed the credit card that the 18-year-old has a bank account. But, you know, if you leave stuff out and about, there used to be a crew that worked the I-5 corridor when I was at Renton, and they would do a distraction in an office, someone would slip down the hall of the office, find open office doors, and they would literally pull credit cards out of ladies' purses and out of men's wallets and not take anything else. Okay, I have four credit cards in my wallet that I know about, that I love, that I won't use anything else of. I won't get any more credit cards in my life because I don't like them. If I'm missing a credit card, I'll know it. If you look at Deb, because I like to pick up my fiance, she's got 12 credit cards. She's got 8 for her business and 4 for her personal. And so I don't know how she knew one was missing, but she did. So be aware of that. If you see people that are suspicious in your area that you don't know, you know, I don't look suspicious, but I've been questioned every once in a while walking through places. Ask. Now, can I help you? Is it the world's greatest thing? And that way they're on notice. I'm looking for the restroom. Something, they'll say something stupid. Ask them, not really confront them, and just be very polite and say, can I help you? Are you lost? Why are you back here? You know, I'm gonna call security, probably would be about the fourth thing I would say. But give them a chance to express what they need to express, and then if they start to act suspicious or hinky, give us a call. If you don't wanna make contact with these people, give us a call. My officers will respond, or I'll respond, or we'll all respond. It's our job. So be aware of your surroundings. But like I said, the largest crime we have here is the larceny. We do get vandalized every once in a while. That's when we get tagged up. We do have some shouting matches. Those are the simple assaults that happen on campus, or just a little bit of a touch. It's hard to believe we're on Capitol Hill that we have liquor law violations, but we do. We do have a little bit of, you know, drug law arrests that happen around the campus as well. Some of these stats do not reflect student or non-student. They're just stats that happen on the campus itself. I don't have to differentiate the stats as student, non-student. I just have to differentiate the stats as on campus, off campus, or public property. So, and I do this every year. The reason I'm pretty knowledgeable about it is I'm one of the 24 instructors from the nation that teach Clery, and so I'm pretty well up on the Clery Act and the Violence Against Women's Act. Maybe the last is a new tool. Any questions so far?
Yes.
information.
Yeah, I have a question.
Right in the slip.
So, at my old college, in the library, I know that there are a number of, thefts. And so what the staff started doing was like having like these stickers that would say, like, we've just been swiped. And so when they would walk around and see people's property, they would leave like a little note saying, your stuff could have gotten stolen. I don't know whether or not that actually had any effect, but do you know whether programs like that actually make any difference?
At three colleges that I was at, the three colleges that I've worked at in my career, in 1981, I was a student security officer at Clark College in Vancouver. It was known as Clark Community College at the time. I've really been aged myself, so I made $3.25 an hour. And through the progression there, I actually became their director later, about 1987. I became their, 87, 88, I became the director of public security there. And I left there in 97. And I was a part-time cop and a bunch of other things. We had a thing that, we had a form that was called lockerism. And what we did to the campus was that we found an office door open. My officers would actually have a book, they'd pull it out, they'd start writing this thing, they'd say, D for here. And they'd walk in, and there's someplace conspicuous in the office, the person for the owner of the office says, we found your door open, we found your purse, blah, 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 please keep the door. And what we would do, we'd actually send a copy of that to their boss. So now the employee's been notified, the boss has been notified. If my officers, I had a three-strike rule. If my officers found this office open 3 times in a row, my officers were somewhat sarcastically comical. They would steal something. They would literally take something out of the office, take it to the employee's boss, give them the lock and loose, write the report, leave the item with them, and leave and say, hey, because the next time we're going to come back. And we'd actually sit down and have conversations. We never got to the three strikes. There was a couple people that tried to. We had a few people in part that wouldn't listen to the rules. But when I came to Bellevue, my main job there wasn't that. My main job was enhancing and correcting their emergency management programs that I was hired for. But when I became a senior officer, and then when I started working my way into the assistant director's position, we had that issue. We'd walk to the library, and there wouldn't be anybody at tables. And so we would just start scooping stuff up and taking it to the circulation desk. And then students come up all pissed off. And so I'd rather scoop and have it somewhere safe than leave it sit and have it be a victim. When I was at Renton, you're talking about 25, maybe 5,000 students. Library are really, really small. Populations are really small. Populations really don't get together a lot. It's a technical school. We tried a few things there. The lock and loose we used there. Public open forums, we used a great deal there. The lock and loose did start to work an awful lot of things with the faculty and the employees because they just don't think. I'm on my way out, I'll be right back. Well, Kelly or Lynn walks out, and then all of a sudden ends up talking to the students. Well, I'm not right back, not the office is standing up being a lot longer. For my office, you have to get by my front counter and two officers. Then you have to get by Ken Gilman, which not too many people get by 10, to get to my office. Okay, so I have a little bit of defense to leave my office door open. This place, if we weren't here, I could do a lot of stuff as a criminal. Director of security, I think, like a criminal. But, if you had little forms that said, you found your iPad, you got a certain issue. Mm-hmm. And if you have a continual problem, then, we can talk to students too. Mm-hmm. I don't want my officers, we have a hard enough time now doing what we do to where we are up here actually enforcing those rules. But yeah, if the library actually started thinking of ways to help the students, that's great. I can tell you that probably by summer, all of your cameras are going to get replaced, I think. I mean, I've been watching the emails go back and forth through procurement right now, and it sounds like it's a done deal. And I think the cameras might be coming in during the spring break. So this old camera will leave. Most likely there won't be a camera here anymore. It's going to move out. I mean, you're going to have less cameras and more coverage, which is kind of a weird way to think about it. But newer cameras cover a lot more than these cameras. And they'll be in better locations. And the plus thing about that is they'll never have to look at film again because it goes to my recorders. So everything actually starts to come to focus. So yeah, we are making some enhancements to the library. And once we get the cameras set up where we're comfortable with where they're set up, then we need to do some urban design stuff for crime prevention, whatever, where we put stacks, where we walls. Raising and lower things so we can actually get a better sight of what's going on. So that'll be the next step after the cameras. And then access control for the next step after that. Because you're one of the final locations that are on metal piece, and I'd love to get you off that. Because that way we have auto control over the car keys. I carry no keys. Everybody thinks it's funny, but my key is my wallet, because I have a car key that I just want. She was hiding in her office. I thought she was
I'm listening in there as I'm checking.
So now we cannot sneak in her office and steal anything, because I was going to send one of you and then it'd be a criminal for me, but don't worry about it. I'm just joking. So, yeah, just talking about the library. Those are the ideas that I've had. You know, it's taken us 3 years to get cameras. It's taken me 3 years to get cameras on the outside of the campus. But, you know, that's one area. You know, I have areas, I have a fifth floor that has a standalone camera system that's been failing for the 3 years I've been here. I have the Broadway Performance Hall that's been on a standalone camera system for longer than I've been here. And the only way it stays alive is whenever we tear out one of these old systems, we give Daryl the pieces and he continues to fix the system. Because me PHing back on my system anytime soon. But we try, I try to get a, you know, I have no money, so I'm buying more on steel. And I just use those type of words. But your question, going back to it, yeah, if there was some way that we had a little piece of paper that you just put on the desk, or, you know who just, you saw the student leave, it's not a good idea. You know, something like that, but you have to get over that fear of talking to people, you know. I'm pretty good about talking to people, and to let you know, when I take the Myers-Briggs, I'm an introvert. I'm an I. I'm a big introvert. Yes, ma'am?
I'm an instructor, and I still still see classrooms left open. Mm-hmm. And I have closed them, and then I've told Harriet about it. But also, I have actually seen instructors walk out of classes and let the just kind of just walk out. Mm-hmm. And so their classroom is has students in, or new students are coming in mm-hmm. for the next class. Mm-hmm. What is your...
I've talked to the Senate. Mm-hmm. I've talked to the instructors. I've talked to my boss. I've talked to the former VP of Instructions and Student Services. Now, I haven't talked to White Point.
But there have been many emails I've talked from to Harriet deans, about it.
And there's been emails from Harriet and I together. I mean, I don't believe in email. I'm kind of, my future 10-year-old son called me old school. I believe in this thing having a face-to-face conversation. And so what'll happen is, for me, when that leaves the classroom, the overhead projector, we haven't had these sold in the 2 years, but when that leaves the classroom, and you were the last one that was audited on the doors of being open, we're supposed to have a code to say, when was the last time you were in the classroom? You're going to tell me, well, I was in there at 10 o'clock. So now I have a window from 10 to whenever the door was closed at midnight, which is the truth, they normally get all locked at 10 o'clock. But I have a 12-hour window. And that's what happened on a couple of our internal thefts after the SAM building got hit really hard a few years ago. They started literally ripping them out of the ceiling in this building. And what had happened was people were leaving the rooms open like you were talking to. And so we went out and did a real hard push on it, and I was out in the hallways an awful lot, walking up and down the halls, closing doors, and pissing people off, and people were asking me who the heck I was, and I turned around and see my dad, and they go, sorry. But you can't teach without that or that, and the only way you're going to protect that or that is to close that. And so that will be my quick conversation with instructors. Harriet and I try to do as best we can. I try not to be a jerk, but you're looking at $3,500 labor included to replace an overhead projector. That's projector, rewiring, new case, and man hour to put it down.
But it must be hard when one class is leaving and another one's right there at the door.
Here's my response to that one. The circuit tells me that. You close that door, then I know you close that door, and when she comes up to present her card, she now becomes responsible for that
door. Right, right.
You know, I very seldom unlock doors for instructors because of the simple fear of they're going to leave that darn door open. I did one yesterday going to a meeting at 2 o'clock and I felt very weird doing it. But she said, you know, I'm a sub teacher for this teacher for the day and blah, blah, blah. I said, as long as it's bore. And then I called Ken and said, would you challenge? Because it's my suspicious nature. But that's what happened. But yeah, if we can get into the opening and closing the doors, which is, it's not that hard of a thing. You're the last person. I was taught as a kid, you're the last person out.
But they're already coming in and people are going out.
We could set the door up if we really wanted to be really jerks about in our program, that every hour at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and 12 o'clock, the door alarm would go off and the door's not closed. I mean, we could do that. Each door has an alarm on it. But the whole building would be chirping and it would drive me crazy, and then I'd get complaints. How do we fix this? I don't know. There is a card out there, that's a proxy card that looks like a photo ID, that as you walk in, it opens.
Well, I have no problem telling students or, you know, if you
students should, I mean, according to the rules, I don't believe in the black and white of this, according to the rules, students should not be present in the classroom without instruction.
Right.
That's according to the policy and procedure. Now, the heart of the rule and the intent of the law, and there's a lot of gray area there, and, you know, I live in the gray area an awful lot, but you know, do we have three classrooms out in the hall with 30 students blocking the hallway from egress and entry? Or if there's an open classroom without anybody in it, just let them go and start taking their seats and getting ready for classes here. Well, it's a gray area. You know, if you're running late, I'm running late as an instructor, you know, would you rather have your class waiting outside? Because I'm right now in the email, not that I don't like it. Not that I hate it. I'm in the email world right now, but it says, with an instructor. Doesn't have keys, you shouldn't have keys because the aeration should already be available, so that they don't need to have keys, it's a big thing. So there's that fine line too. I mean, I don't want students staying out in the hall blocking the hall because we have to evacuate or shelter in place and get into some place and I'd rather have the hallways. Do we allow them to go to the classrooms without instructors? We do it. Even though the rules say we shouldn't do it, we're not supposed to do it, we allow it. It's a culture that we have to shift to and change to. And I believe in change, but I believe in glacial change. So in other words, slow change over time instead of we're going to do this today. It's in little segments. I'm not a firm believer of shoving things down people's throats because I get pushed back. But if I can have classic examples and have continual conversations, we can't have change. Bellevue, when I was there, everybody wanted to have keys. Bellevue's a very unique campus to where all their classrooms face the courtyard for 90% of them, and they're on an A and B level. Each one of the classrooms is an individual key. There is over 373 classrooms that face the courtyard. There is over an average of 5 instructors per classroom, and each instructor wanted a key. My mind says that's about 2,000 keys. My key guy told me on the average it costs $6 a key for the key blank. Then he threw in his hourly rate to make the key. It would cost $2 million to make those keys. We made them. Because if we ever went to a shelter place lockdown situation, the instructor needed to be able to lock the door. Because I wasn't going to put a different type of lock on
the door.
Oh no, have you ever went to Bell? They're thinking about doing card access, and the only way they can do it is wireless, and that costs about 3 times as much as normal. Yes, ma'am?
I have some questions.
Have a seat.
I like to stand, but it's all right, I'll have a seat. One, we don't have key cards in the library.
See, you came in late to know.
Did you talk about that? Oh, I'm sorry. Just okay. Then,
what's happening is you're getting cameras. You're probably going to get cameras.
Well, I know about the cameras.
Hopefully spring you're going to get cameras. You're one of the last areas that don't have card access.
Right.
And what we're looking at, and it, to expand upon that a little bit, we used to have to go through a contractor to do it, and that's expensive. We hired a person part-time that used to work for the door company that actually stored a lot of our card access here. Well, he went to work for another company. And then for some reason we hired him part-time, and somehow through the state magic, he now is a full-time employee for us. So now what we do is we buy the equipment to the hardware, and Jason goes out and installs it. We had a meeting this morning about door access control. It wasn't about the library, it was generally the whole thing. And I looked at Jason, I said, how much? Not you, Jason, but my Jason. I said, how much is it gonna cost for the parts to do the library? And he goes, just the cost for the readers. He goes, you know, the doors are already this, we gotta let the pens and blah, blah, blah. And so there was a conversation today. As part of the integration in here, I wanna get the cameras taken care of first. And get the cameras pointed. And then we gotta do some urban design stuff out there about height and stuff, so we can actually shoot a lot of that. There was a conversation, I think, last year with a group of us about accessing the quiet study rooms and controlling that. That could be integrated into the access control of this area. I just need to head up and everything calms down. And after I spent $500,000 for other cameras and stuff, we need to readdress that. And then
so
if we can get you into
access. Can we get you more money?
Well, it's not. I have no money. I go steal.
That's what I hear you say.
I beg, borrow, steal.
Have you written a proposal to the student?
Student leadership, some of the things that I've asked student leadership for, kind of for the longest time until this year, fell on deaf ears. I think now that there's a change of leadership over there, things will actually start to talk about. What I'm finishing up is I wrote a memo of understanding that I haven't given to them yet about AEPs. When I left, I didn't talk about my credit, my previous places. When I left, right before I left Bellevue, I wrote an MOU that's still in place today at Bellevue that says if the college or public safety has it, we'll buy an AED. Student government will buy an AED on the matching program. When I left Bellevue, they had 6 AEDs. 3 were bought by us, by my department. I budgeted every year as assistant director to purchase a certain number of AEDs, and 3 were bought by student government. I need an external defibrillator, heart starter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we have one in the library.
So why I'm saying that is I left Bellevue in, I left Bellevue in 07. So 8 years later, every building, every major area in Bellevue, and the gym actually has 3 now, which had 0. Every area that they thought needed one or should have one has one. And the MOU is still in place. Faisal is a really good friend of mine. He's the director of student programs there. And he's going to honor that to the day he retires, and hopefully the grandfather. But that was an MOU I wrote. So I have that MOU. I've actually tweaked it a little bit. And I'm going to set up a meeting with Maggie to talk about a couple things that I think are good initiatives for the college and for student leadership to partner on, and a little bit good for the school and everything. AEDs on every floor. AEDs on every floor and every in the middle. So you're looking at 5 floors, 15 AEDs to augment the current AEDs we have. An AED that is stored in the public safety officer's office to carry, an AED on every floor in the back, an AED in the bookstore, and student government, and probably then an AED in every alternate site building. And then the same building, main floor, and probably down too. So, you know, that's a program I think we would. Smoking's a big issue. You know, I came from a smoking meeting yesterday. And we're not getting smoking shelters, but you know, that was an idea was that the college bought a smoking shelter. The student government, because you know, 80% of them smoke on this campus and they're causing big issues right now. And the rain is coming, it's gonna cause a bigger issue. So maybe the students could put up for one and we could put up for another. So there are initiatives out there. I have to pick and choose though. You know, access control in the library, it's not a student issue, it's more of an institutional issue. So where do I get the institutional funding? That's easy. I talk to Chuck and David Ernabardo, we're in facilities, and say, these are the projects we need to look at, and can we get some more equipment money dedicated to door locking hardware and access control? You know, Chuck will push the money that way to that, so we go out and buy the parts. Jason gets paid state salary plus overtime. He's our in-house guy that knows how to do it. He's cleaned up a lot of things that were issues that were tired. Because he's been on board with this. So, the long answer to your short question, short answer to your long question, or however you want to put it, we will get it taken care of. It'll be done in-house. It's cheaper. We just need to buy the parts. As far as the camera system goes, there was no way to find the money. Wife almost just like me. We went to the budget thing last year, and I asked for money for some evac chairs and some other things to train for my officers. I got it. She asked for the lump sum for the camera system, she got it, and so now we're moving forward on that. But you'll see some great changes on campus by fall. I mean, we'll have emergency call towers outside with cameras on them, we'll have call boxes on the outside of most of the buildings, the garage will have cameras in it by this fall. There'll be call boxes on all the landings that connect to public safety officer. If you're having a problem in the garage, you can just push a button, we'll see a location or hear a location on the radios, and you can talk to my officers as things are happening. There'll actually be a blue talkophone tower on the fourth floor of the parking garage holding cameras. And yeah, we're exterior wise, we're gonna have a lot of things. We're actually adding more cameras to the inside of this building to go along with that program for the project. And it's money that's been there for the 3 years I've been here. We just haven't got a chance to spend it. So.
How about more lighting?
Actually, they are working on the lighting on Harvard will be completed probably by the end of this quarter.
Of Harvard?
On Harvard, on the backside. If you go out there at night right now, all the way down the facade until you get to the end of this building, so
yeah.
All those lights have been replaced with high mercury halides. They've fired up, they've actually got the two lights on top between here and the BPH are now functional, and we are now, you can actually look at the bookstore. We are actually repositioning the lights on the bookstore, turning them back on. And the apartments have no problems with that because it actually helps out with their tenants and our population at the same time. So yeah, we've replaced all the lights down the back side of the MAC 2 years ago, and that was helped out by the city on the Nagel thing. Mm-hmm. Because the city, Hunter Management that runs that whole building gave some money, and we gave some money, and it was all state property that got fixed. And mm-hmm. The fence we put back there was paid for by us to keep it almost away from the way it was.
Did you talk about the security survey that
you've
done?
Oh, the state one that Heather put out?
Yeah, did students take that as well? As
I don't, that was a state survey, that wasn't a survey that was done by us, it was done by the state, and I think it covered all 32 colleges
yeah.
and universities. I didn't have a chance to go in there and look at it very deeply. I know that Chuck, Jeff, and I did a administrative services survey last year through Karen Weiss, down for those who were up left. And I think the top three things that came out of my office was time it took to issue the key, and well, that key guy's not here anymore. Jason's pretty quick. To be exact, here's a case in point. Before I came up here, a young lady walked in with the metal key that she needed to have copied. I think it was like 11:15. I was walking up to get my annual sandwich, my daily sandwich from the atrium. And that was 11:15. I walked back in the office after getting it all done at 11:30, and Rudy was walking back in with the key already. So I think the key making process, the metal, as long as we don't have to go out and order the key blank, will happen in 24 hours, unless it's a special key, and then we have to go out and order.
We requested this one, but I don't want to bore the students with this kind of talk, because
yeah.
They probably have.
But yeah, the survey, I really didn't see the survey. I really didn't look at the statewide survey. I know the survey we sent out had to do with accessing, key issuing. And then there was a visibility question, not so much about public safety, because people thought that since I've been here, we've been more visible than invisible. And then they wanted to score the CD more. And then, I can't remember what the third one was, but I don't think it was, if I can't remember, my daddy was going to score.
As far as students are concerned, I've been here 3 years mm-hmm. and have not had any surveys whatsoever regarding any safety or security issues sent to the students. Most of the surveys, I have Citrus account because I also work for the school, so I get to read what's sent to the employees as in the old staff
sure.
emails, and I get to see, and I have the student
as
email
well
account, so I get to see what's sent specifically to the students on the Seattle Central .edu account.
Yeah.
On that account, we had two surveys. One had to do with changing our name, and another one had to do with smoking, and that's it in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So,
because I wonder how students feel about their safety here, if they feel safe on campus in general.
Your student?
Yes.
Do you feel safe? Weren't you in that class that I talked to?
Oh,
or
not, but it's similar.
Similar class? Okay. Do you feel safe here? I hate to put you on the spot, but. For the most part, yeah. What's the most part know then?
I want the garage at night.
What makes it a little uneasy?
Yeah, what makes you feel a little bit uneasy?
Getting off the bus in the morning and seeing questionable people yelling around on the street, maybe in front of like the north entryway and the south entryway.
Okay. That's good. So if I told you that if you saw that, and if you called my security office number, my public safety office number, which I'll give to you in a second, and my officers will come out and talk to these people and get them moving along, because I'm pretty certain there are a population that likes to be here overnight and leave before the sun comes up, they might be able to park if they're homeless. And my officers probably know that, by the way. You know, that's good information to know, because if it's affecting you, it's affecting other students.
It scares me too, when I walk out on the sidewalk and somebody comes up just and they're like ranting, they're just like,
Kelly, if you can call us, call us.
Remember when Rachel and me made the presentation about the veterans issues? Yeah. Rachel is one of our student veterans. She takes most of the afternoon and evening classes. She made a good point that getting back to the garage in the evening is always been a major adventure for most of us. And I don't drive, so I can't answer that one. I take the bus. But as it gets darker, it gets more interesting outside the doors.
It really does. And that's the one thing, I take security 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
Seriously. In the wintertime, the things you need to remember is it gets darker earlier, it stays darker longer. And, my bottom line to that whole thing and what I've talked to people about is, when we were kids, you knew when you were getting in trouble, you had that sixth sense. Mm-hmm. As we get older, we dispel that feeling. And I when I gave this presentation to classrooms and to faculty meetings every once in a while, I tell the story about when I was a cop. And I was driving a Ford Explorer, and I was doing 90 miles an hour. I was going to a call as a sheriff's deputy, and I was working North Clark County out of Vancouver, watching out of Down Road with an Amboy up in the sticks. And I was coming 90 miles an hour around this corner, and as I was getting ready to go around the corner and explore, I thought, I had this fleeting moment that I better slow down. And I don't know why. It was that sixth sense. And as I came around the corner and slowed down, there was a 1,500-pound bull elk standing in the middle of the road. And I was going, that's a good reason to slow down. And so it was a decision time, and it was a split-second decision time, to either hit 1,500 pounds of elk at 90 miles an hour, which it's not the impact that kills you, but the sudden stop. It's not the sudden stop, it's continual motion that will hurt you. I took the ditch. And so I put my Explorer in the ditch and it rolled and I lived. But I started thinking about all the times that I had that sixth sense after I was a kid and how each time it actually saved my life or stopped me from doing something stupid. We as adults don't believe in that sixth sense anymore. We gotta get back to that. If you feel, us men are always taught, don't cry, we used to, if we get back to that feeling again of this just doesn't feel right, I need to make a call, mm-hmm. I need to take a step back and take a look. It only takes a second, because I can tell you that happened to me twice on two different roads up outside of Selassie Prairie, and I know you guys don't even know where it is I'm talking about. And each time it was an elk in the middle of the road, and each time I wrecked my car. But I knew it was coming, because I had that feeling that something wasn't right. So if you take that into account in your daily routines, I see.
Can I ask a little more about Sarah? Is that your Sarah?
Yeah.
About Sarah's question. So you said if you see someone that you feel uncomfortable around, just call you. But is that just this block? If I'm across the street?
If you're at the MAC, if you're on NECL Central College campus,
okay.
I think what you need to realize is, and I got corrected just a little bit, Seattle Central College should have an S on it. They should have told me that when I applied for this job 3 years ago. Because we have a Maritime Academy. It's part of Seattle Central College. Mm-hmm. We have the Wood Technology Center, which is part of Seattle Central College. And SBI is affiliated with us, but they have their own college number. I thought that was true. So I have literally four campuses, mm-hmm. plus a district office that I have to provide security for. And Joel and I have a meeting, we're kind of laughing at each other. But what our geolocation, as far as my campus goes, is I have a map hanging in my office. and I kind of, in my mind, I know exactly where campus is at. So something happened on the sidewalk over there at the cash machine. I'd want to know about it. It's not going to be a crime stuff because that's not campus, but it's a little close to campus. Something happened at the bookstore, for the bookstore or for the Mac. That's campus. It belongs to me.
There's something happening there all every day.
On the backside, on Nagel, we don't, you know.
They're going through that pathway there.
But, yeah, you know, if you're close to campus, call us. I mean, well, you know, we'll tell, you know, if you say I'm standing right outside of Panera, mm-hmm. you're close enough, my officers will know. If you say you're standing in the middle of Cal Anderson Park.
If I'm standing in front of Rite Aid.
If you're, I don't, where's Rite Aid?
Walgreens.
Walgreens. Rite Aid, Walgreens are public property. That's not our jurisdiction.
Well, Rite Aid is way farther than this college. That's
if you're at the North Plaza or the parking lot behind North Plaza, that's campus.
Because I made a call in the past. It was in front of GameStop right here, and the officer said, "Like, well, you're gonna have to call the police, and we'll call as well." Mm-hmm. But that's outside of our area. Yeah.
It is. It's public property adjacent to the campus. Yeah. Now, if there's a full blown fight going on there, I know several officers that have done it. They've seen the altercation going on, responded to assist and calmed down while police were responding. Because we had a situation that was happening right in front of Panera last spring where Noah and Cheryl got were there, and all of a sudden the guys went off on some other guy and the fight started, and then it was a bad thing to have Noah, who's a former boxer, get involved with it, but Noah hit one of the guys and was in a fight and knocked him out. And then Cheryl was pulling out the pepper spray, and three SPD units came up and said, we'll handle it, go back to campus. And Noah's going, I just need us to go back to campus. You're blanking this out. I'm going back to campus. Any war stories need to be blanked out. Yes, ma'am.
So first of all, how many officers do you have? And secondly, it sounds like you've tightened up a bit. Because sometimes I used to call and it was sort of like an indifferent response. And also we have certain computer labs. I work for the SL Department of Basic Studies, and I used to find security officers in there surfing.
Okay. I have two at Wood Tech that are full time. I'd have to go back to my website. Tracy Noah. I have Shiro as a sergeant, Tracy, Noah, Joel, you're making a name of all, Nels, Adrian, Hal, did I forget you? We have seven on campus. We're hiring a fill position now for a person that resigned. So I have eight full-time here. I have about six part-timers that work weekends and off hours that I do coverage on. Before I came here, we only had coverage till midnight, and then we were not covered from midnight to 5. And when I had over 20 overhead projectors total in my first 6 months I was here, we actually had 24/7 coverage and kind of help with the crime problem. So we truly have a 24/7, 365 coverage now. There will be an officer on campus every day of the week, Monday through Friday, holidays, all day. There will be someone here. My salary budget doesn't span to cover that. It's a need. There's a million square feet. This building alone, you know. So yeah, we have 24/7, Monday, pretty much Monday through Friday, there's full-time coverage on everything. And then on Saturday, Sunday nights, I have an additional part-timer that works overnight graveyard because of the parking issues in the parking garage and all that stuff that goes on over there in the weekends. So we hold in a part-timer there. But yeah, we have a better coverage. We have a better philosophy. We have better missions and goals. And if I have to be, I can be very micro. But it drives me crazy to be a micromanager. It really does. I don't have time to micromanage my people, and they understand that. So I'm a macro manager. And you won't find one of my officers in the computer lab surfing people. Because I'm pretty easy going and laid back on the outside, but if I hear about that kind of stuff, I have a very strong father-son and father-daughter conversation with whoever's happening, officer, boss type conversation, and it won't happen. I feel very strongly about that kind of stuff. We're here to do a job. We're not here to sit on a computer lab. We're not here to watch TV during off hours to catch games or whatever happens at institutions. You know, if you want to do a game, we all have iPhones. I have ESQ. I have it's changed a lot in 3 years. I know that. I mean, I've had conversations with people, and they, I think, have appreciated the changes we have. And I think we're actually moving in the right direction. And that was one reason I think I was asked to come to work here. And I think that was one reason I was asked to apply. I was actually sought out to apply. I was called by an administrator to apply for this job. I didn't find this job online.
So he stole you from Bellevue?
He stole me from Renton. Renton stole me from Bellevue with the opportunity to build a program there. And then somehow I got a phone call from here, a cold call from here, saying the position was open.
I think we have a question.
Oh, yeah,
he works for me, so I
yeah, I'm going to get a break. Yeah, it's about integrity. It's you know, you hire good officers. You know, I stay humble, but I stay strong.
Are you an officer?
Yeah, I worked at Wood Tech. I've been there for a few months. I ran into Sergeant Shiro. I was a student here for 5 quarters. And I was glad to get part-time doing it. I thank you for the part-time work. But I take it seriously. I don't sit in the office. I do walk it. I take people's safety and security. You know, I'm not Seattle Police Department. That's things out of my hands. But I keep an eye on the place, and I don't play games on it. And I'm just, you know, so I appreciate it.
Well, I think what people need to realize is the process to hire part-timers is the same process we use to hire full-timers. The part-timers go through the district now to apply for a part-time hourly job. Whereas in the past, my predecessors would just have someone would walk in and say, I want to apply for a job, and have a paper application filled out if I felt like you were a good fit, you were in. Now they have to actually fill out the same application on the EOGov like a full-timer, and they go into the part-time pool, they give us a resume and a cover letter. And then I go out and lean it and look through the list, and I get the list kind of shortened up, and I send it to Shiro, who's my sergeant. And Shiro handles all the part-timers. I have nothing to do with the part-timers. Shiro will say, I want to hire Kevin, I want to hire Marvin. We're going to be hiring a young man named Ulysses here pretty soon. I want to hire Ulysses. I said, you've got to supervise him. Do what you need to do. I might have a conversation. I think Kevin and I talked for about 15, 20 minutes one day before we get hired. But I leave it on Shiro to do. My officers make a pretty good wage to do what they do. They start out a little bit lower than the $15 an hour, but after about a year, they'll make $17 an hour. My part-time hourly officers are not treated any different than my full-time officers. They're campus security officers, public safety officers for the institution. They all get treated the same because they are the same. There's nothing different. You know, one just works 23 more hours, 24 more hours. So, yes, ma'am.
So I know you work with the safety committee, right? Mm-hmm. Do we have a plan? Are we going to have training for what to do if a shooter comes in?
I offered training, what was it, whenever you guys got that 3% budget cut thing, you guys had 3% salary reduction. I offered training over the summer every Friday for active shooter.
Faculty aren't there in the summer necessarily.
I offer training. I mean, I'm available.
Faculty are the ones who are going to be in charge in the classroom situation. So when are we going
to
make time as a campus to make sure that all faculty know what to do in that kind of a situation? I'm on the faculty
senate. I talked to Rob. I was up there the other day.
They think the college should be having a plan.
They should actually, if they want to do it, call me. You set a day apart on one of these days that needs to be booked 5 years out, and I'll be more than happy to bring it. I'm a trainer. I can train on active shooter. I can train on bullying. I can train on safe passages for travel. I mean, the Center
but
for
the
Personal
administration doesn't feel that responsibility.
I don't think the administration is against it.
Somebody has to have that responsibility.
It's my responsibility. It's my responsibility to train. I think the faculty and the groups that want it need just to get together, figure out a time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, the safety committee. I'm on the safety committee. He's on the safety committee. Yeah. They do a great deal of talking.
Yeah.
They're in a lot of action. Don't tape it.
Don't tape that. That's where it needs to go.
There isn't a lot
Susan's
of action.
Not, and she brings back a lot of information.
She does, but. There's a whole lot of talking, and you know, like most committees, there's and the safety committee really, they don't think they have a lot of power, but the safety committee does have a little bit of teeth because the president votes in the safety committee. What I would say is, if the library wants to have a conversation about active shooters, it's 90 minutes, I'd say 2 hours. there's a pre-conversation, there's the video, there's a DVD, we could do it in here. And there's a post-conversation about that. And, you know, it also talks about personal preparedness, because the bottom line is, you're not going to be any good to me or the college or yourself until you have your personal plan. You know, people laugh at me, but when I was married, I've been married, but my last wife, we had a daughter. Abby is the world's sweetest cocker spaniel. She has a few health issues. My dog has a 3-day, 3-way kid. My dog has, and she is my dog because I have park in my in the divorce decree. I get custody rights and visitation to my dog. I'm not lying. I've read the papers. So anyway, she has pills, and so I made a 3-day, 3-way kit for her. Her favorite blankets are in there. A bunch of rawhides are in there. Medications in there. There's four liters of water in there, and it's a little tub. Julie has one, and I used to have one. Now that Julie lives right down
the street. We have them in the library too.
But this is for my puppy. Okay, I have no kids, so but I have I have enough supplies at my new house for two kids and two adults to survive at least a week. You know, our freezer always has stuff in it. We have two camp stoves. You know, am I a survivalist doomsday type guy? No, but I practice what I preach. In my truck, I have a red bag that has a change of clothes and a bunch of stuff in it. To the extreme, I have slippers underneath my bed, so when the earthquake happens and the windows break, I don't cut my feet on the mat. Little things you don't think about. What I'm trying to say is, if you're not prepared at home, you know, with your family, you're going to worry more about them than the scenarios happening here. We're going to have an earthquake, or a mudslide, or a massive natural disaster before we have a man-made situation. So when the Howard Hanson Dam does decide to break, because it is going to break someday, it's going to flood and knock out one.
So you need something new to worry about? I don't even know about that.
Howard Hanson is up around Retinary and it comes down the river and all this kind of stuff. But you need to have those plans. You know, 2 years ago they had the big snow.
Where's the Howard Hanson Dam?
Up the Green River. It's up the Green River.
And it's going to burst?
Well, there was
it's an earthen dam. It's not concrete.
But it'll affect you trying to get south because it sinks that low.
I see.
But you need to have your personal plan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that's part of the
plan. I have a phone plan
and all that kind of stuff.
I got a couple questions if you have time after this.
Okay.